Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Hot off the heels of our conversation from the episode that we recorded yesterday that you may hear next week or this week.
You heard it last week. This comes out next week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't want to do two non-fully modern focus because like last week we did, or 2 weeks ago, we did the episode where we talked about...
Tudors? The history of Tudors?
No, the week before that. We did the magic movie
casting.
And so this is a little bit more in the speculative magic story based side. So I don't want to do that 2 weeks in a row.
I beg to differ because I would not have signed off on that if it was just entirely that. This is definitely a conversation that references modern. There's interest here for some
modern
player.
But it's not as modern focused as say the top Tudors in modern.
100%.
So I'm gonna.
Which by the way, I realized we forgot a very important one, which was War of Invention.
I don't know what that is.
That's the new
one. Oh, the new one.
It's the improvised.
I don't know how important. I mean, we should have talked about it.
It's a pretty relevant tutor considering some of the tutors we talked about.
Yeah. You're right. Totally true. well, actually, a better and more, even more important one in the same family. We should have talked about that. Not that we shouldn't talk about that one, but is the land that also is a tutor. You can sack
it. All the transmute lands?
If you have Metalcraft, you can sack it and find...
Spire of Industry. Yes. No, not Spire of Industry.
Inventor's Fair.
Fair. Like, that's a really relevant one.
Oh, and
more relevant than, like, probably 90% of what we talked about.
And another one we forgot to mention was Congregation at Dawn, which is an interesting one.
That's one where you stack the top of your deck with legendary creatures?
With three creatures.
Just three creatures. Okay.
It's green, green, white, I think.
Instant. Yeah. But it has, like, them shaking hands.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty interesting card. It's surprising that card has never seen more play. Anyway, that was last week's episode.
Yeah, so this week, if you haven't noticed, we have Marshall James.
Hey, everyone.
So you might recognize from the Modern Masters block draft.
Which was really dope.
Yeah,
thanks for inviting me to be on that.
What did you draft?
I ended up drafting black, blue, like, spells. Like,
okay.
Just, I had a ton of removal and then just a few, like... clutch
flyers. You were like kind of blue-white flyers, kind of blue-black.
I started in blue. I ended up in Esper, essentially like Esper, but it was mostly just a little splash of white by the end to play like Tower Gargoyle and something else.
I just ended up in Summoning Trap Kozilek.
Yeah. And fun fact, and kind of relevant to today's episode, Marshall was also on this podcast before Ben was.
Forever ago.
Second episode we ever did back in the Glenn Jones days when we reviewed Khans of Tarkir.
For modern.
And we did a Norin Soul Sisters as the deck tech, which I think is the only modern deck you've ever...
It's the only modern deck that I still have together. I keep like, you know, like I've played so many decks which are now illegal in modern, but like I was an early adopter of Birthing Pod. Like I remember that card came out and I was immediately like, this card's only $1. Why? This card seems great.
Card was sick from day one.
It was all about Malira Pod.
I like was looking through, and this is once again not modern related, but commander decks recently, and I was like, oh, just every commander deck that has green should run Birthing Pod. This card is absolutely not everyone, I guess, if you have no creatures in your deck, but it's bonkers. That card's nuts.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
But yeah, so today we're talking about we're speculating on the future, maybe a little bit of a future sight kind of thing going on.
Ooh.
Which Ben is excited about.
Returned, you can't dangle that carrot. It's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about returning to blocks, returning to sets, returning to planes.
Yeah, and so we're going to go through kind of the main sets of Magic. And the ones that we are likely to return to, and we'll probably, you know, we'll wait the ones that we haven't returned to, or you know, Endor, Scars of Mirrodin, Return of Ravnica, which are sets that we haven't returned to in a long time, a little higher than we're going to rate the Shadows of Innistrad or the Zendikars or the Kaladeshes or the Almaquets, because we're still there, or just recently there. So, but we're gonna go through each of the different kind of major sets and talk about what it means, what we think will happen when it returns, what we are expecting, what we're excited for, what we hope happens, what we hope doesn't happen. What cool mechanics we think they'll be relevant, any reprints, kind of the whole gambit.
Combination wish list and speculation.
So this is what's going to happen.
Shot calls.
This is how this is going to happen. A couple things. A, we're going to do shout outs right now. And B, I'm going to be the one asking questions to you guys because you understand the story and history, which means I can direct the conversation and you can fill in the answers.
Well, but you played in these sets.
No, no.
And you'll be like, oh, I really liked these. Like, these are the mechanics I like.
I'll chime in.
I want this one to show
but
up.
But if we
and
do
I
it the
like
other way around, you'll be like, blah, 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 character went back to this place and then he did this. And I'll just be sitting there like asking questions, which is why I should be asking the questions in the first place because then it actually keeps the flow going.
Okay.
So otherwise, let's get into our shout outs. Twitter.
We are collectively... at the MMCast. I am personally at Kes Wiley. You are personally
at Tom Cruise. What did I say that?
I'm at
Media.
And I'm at Do I Still Love It, which is also the name of my pop culture podcast that Kessler has been on and Ben will be on in the not too distant future.
Yeah, we've been talking about that.
We talked about Power Rangers. I'm sad that movie wasn't better.
I didn't see the remake. I heard that it was like worth it if you liked Power Rangers back in the day.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, like it is nowhere close to the worst movie I've seen this year. And
fantastic.
Oh, I heard it was much better than that.
It was fine. Watching Riverdale, I'm disappointed that it's so much like it could have been like Riverdale meets Power Rangers because they like are trying to do that a little bit. It's a little bit CW, like it's very Smallville-y. If I were to point it at a specific show,
it makes me sad that people take for granted the fact that doing stuff like Riverdale is as easy. They're like, oh, it's just teen TV. It's like, but really, really good teen TV when it's like that.
Oh,
it's so fist pumpy is like. Actually, not that hard. It's not that easy to achieve. Doing it really well is like, oh, this is...
Well, there's a reason why Freaks and Geeks is still enshrined all these years later. You know, like, that was kind of like an original, like, off-kilter teen.
Yeah.
Like, this is about teens, sort of.
The OC. I love the show. It's like my favorite show.
I've watched every episode of Dawson's Creek. I've watched the tail end of Gossip Girl.
Oh, that show's great.
Which is like, really good. It's crazy. Yeah, it's a genre of show that, and there are bad ones. Like I won't touch the One Tree Hills or the whatever. The Hills, is that a show?
The Hills was one, I believe.
Yeah. So like there's the lower end, but when they're good, they're like, and they're completely guilty pleasures, but they're definitely
sure.
Yeah. All right. Magic Podcast talking about CW teen dramas.
This episode is titled Tangent.
So
we're on collected.company. That's where you can find our podcast.
Make sure to check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone, and all the cool content they do. The Pro Tour just happened last week, and we're probably not talking about it because it wasn't a modern Pro Tour because there's no longer modern Pro Tours. But Jerry T, though, who has been on the cast before, won the whole thing. The Masters of Modern. You know, we've had an
alum.
We do pretty good at the predicting pros that get on the, or we just get a lot of pros on.
Yeah.
For like what we do.
Right. Big time.
Yeah.
Last but not least, guys, we're on Patreon, patreon.com/themmcast. It's how we stay in business. It's how we bought these mics. We have to come up with a good remote recording setup because Kessler and I are on the road all the time now.
Yep, we're literally recording 2 days in a row, one of them at 6 a.m. because I'm leaving again for another 10 days.
Last week,
we're dragging a little bit because we stayed up last night playing Commander and then brainstorming for this podcast.
Did we record last week with you in Hong Kong and me in wherever I was?
North Carolina?
No,
Boston?
I think that's what we just did.
Yeah, we did that. That was when we did the movie one. And then your audio cuts out at the end and then I was like stuck rambling by myself. And then promised we'd do a brew episode this last week and we didn't because we didn't get enough brews.
Yeah.
So if you guys want us to do a brew episode, please go to the Patreon and submit brews. And once we have three ones that we like, we'll do them. Right now, I think we have one. So
yeah,
we need two more brews that are approved. Use Omicet cards, and then we'll do our brew episode.
When we say
for the
block. Like, what he means is they need to be A, using new cards, and B, not being redundant of ones we've talked about before.
Correct.
So we need unique takes.
Send me your Bounty of the Luxa decks.
Yeah.
Card sweet. I'm just building. I'm
cycle
just
cycle lands, but
yeah. Oh, I mean, those are obviously good. But like Bounty of the Luxa is like, ooh, how do you like? How awesome is this once it's going?
I'm just brewing with Cynic Nissa over and over again. I'm just trying to come up with the best way to use Cynic Nissa to cast Mirror Superior off the top of my deck.
Guys, Life from the Loam, cycle lands.
Yeah, no, that's really good.
Have I mentioned the cycle lands to you guys recently?
So good. All right, let's get started.
All right, so first set, and this is the one that we like. This is where this kind of conversation started. So I think it's, or should we start with the small one? Let's start with the small
one.
Well,
this is my opinion on the subject. So
go in order.
Well, no, because let's just acknowledge the fact that effectively 5 times we've gone back somewhere. We've gone back to Mirrodin, we've gone back to Ravnica, we've gone back to Zendikar, we've gone back to Innistrad, and to some degree, Cold Snap was going back to Ice Age.
Well, to Dominaria.
Yeah,
so that's also where Time Spiral takes place.
I mean, Time Spiral is a reference set that covers like a bunch of different eras, but Cold Snap is legitimately, I'm giving you cards that should have been from that set, they're gonna feel just like that set.
I think I would agree that Cold Snap is, yes, it's returning the Dominaria from a plane perspective, but it is returning to a block.
Sure.
So it is, I agree.
Return to Ice Age. Yeah, I get that.
So like if they were gonna make Return to Ice Age, for instance, it wouldn't be as special as like Return to Tempest or something. Because
sure.
They'd kind of done it in the modern era. Kind of. I mean 10 years ago. But
yeah. It was cool that Cold Snap came out the summer right before Time Spiral, so it feels like a part of Time Spiral.
Was it before or was it the summer after? I thought it was the summer after.
I think it was right before because they initially wanted to print Limduel the Necromancer in Cold Snap, but they're like, no, we already put it in Time Spiral.
Gotcha.
And so that's the reason they did deeper cuts like Lovisa Cold Eyes.
Right.
And but then Xur the Enchanter, they're like, no, I'm drawing a line in the sand. Xur the Enchanter stays in Cold Snap. And they're like, okay, fine.
Xur's sick. We talked about Xur quite a bit. We figured out that on the Tutors episode, there was just no good enchantment tutors in Modern. Like, the nomination for best enchantment tutor in Modern was Xur.
I guess Idyllic's just too costly.
Yeah, I mean, like, Fabricate doesn't... like, we, like, talked about it for a while, and it just, like...
I argued my points, but the agreement in the end was if they had made Call to the Gatewatch and Idyllic Tutor one card, Planeswalker or enchantment, it might be playable.
It would still be unplayable.
That's so sad.
I think, actually, like, afterwards, thinking about it, I think the find an aura or an equipment for two mana might be the best enchantment tutor.
Oh, open the armory.
Yeah, and I don't know if that card's even playable, but I think I think at least it finds an enchantment, but it also has the playability of finding a Batterskull.
So, all right. So there's two halves to this. Those are the ones we've gone back to already, kind of. The four definitely, and Cold Snap being a kind of. Aside from that, you've got the pre-modern and the post-modern. So,
well, I think we're only talking modern legal sets. Partly because everything before that is, for all intents and purposes, Dominaria and or like sets that no one knew was not on Dominaria.
Yeah, I mean, if you get down to it, like pre-modern, everything takes place on Dominaria, with the exception of the Tempest block, which takes place on a plane which no longer exists, Mercadian Mass, which takes place on a plane that they're not interested in revisiting, and that's really... Oh, and then there's like Ulgrotha, where homelands exist, which they're not planning on revisiting. So pretty much everything is either Dominaria, a place that doesn't exist, or a place they've been very adamant we're not going back there.
Okay, but so like just to be totally fair to the conversation, half of this is going back to a plane for the sake of story, and half of this is coming up with a way to revisit, characters, themes, card types, card names, mechanics. And I don't think... Because in the modern era, what we just talked about is that four of the major ones have already been revisited. So when you start to get into the other ones, from a popularity perspective, there aren't that many left that are like the hugely popular sets people would be dying to go back to. So you have to get a little more clever and a little more creative unless you want to just retread old ground.
Well, I think we'll retread old ground. Like, I think we're returning to Mirrodin because it's now New Phyrexia. Like, every plane that we would return to that we've been to has gone through a big change other than maybe Ravnica, which we will talk about. But... when you go to the older stuff, I think we'll return the Dominaria. And I think when we return the Dominaria, we'll get some of the mechanics that make Dominaria famous from all of those sets. But otherwise, like, they've done a good job of cycling in what those mechanically were exciting into what we have now. And most, from a story perspective, we're thousands of years from that era. So all the, like, humans that were alive then are dead.
Got it. Well, and
we're not going to get... Kamal's not around anymore.
Right. Gotcha.
He punched himself in the
face.
Plus,
we also did get one brief little glimpse into what's going on in Dominaria during Magic Origins, because Liliana is from Dominaria.
Gotcha.
So
okay,
tenth of that set has like a little glimpse at what's going on there.
Fifth.
Well, but they had 10 planes.
Oh, yeah, because it goes where they went. And then where did she end up?
Innistrad.
Right.
That all makes sense.
So now it's interesting. One thing that I find really interesting is in the grand scheme of Magic, you know, growing up and getting into Magic, and like I got back into it in 07. That's like when I got into competitive Magic. So for the first few years there, and especially when Modern first was announced, it was like there was more old sets in my mind than new sets with the new card face. Now there's been so many blocks that when you start to go back to that stuff that is pre-card face change, there aren't that many sets. Really, like there just aren't. There's a few. There's a handful. A small handful. And most of the cards will never see a reprinting. They're never going to go back to any of that stuff. And the game has really evolved into a place now where the design is so far beyond what we had back then. This conversation becomes almost irrelevant to a lot of that old stuff. Some of it, there's a precedent maybe, but a lot of those older sets, like if I'm just like, Mercadian Masks, like are we ever going to go back to Masks block for any reason?
Well, and I think they've done a really good job of layering the beloved mechanics from that era into new planes. Like Innistrad now has Madness and Flashback, and Amaket is
the new
cycling planes. Yeah. And, you know, so, and Tarkir is the new morph plane. So, like, the things that people liked from those sets back in the day have become folded into
modern Magic.
Modern Magic. And then have been adopted by planes instead of everything on Dominaria.
Do you think that they could adopt the Rebel and Mercenary card design for a new creature type in another set?
I think it's really bad.
Like the recruit mechanic itself?
This, like that mechanic. I think Rebels and Mercenaries could come back because I think as a creature types, they're really cool.
Yep.
And then when we get the Tarkir, specifically Rebels seems really sweet for that set and what's going on there.
I know
I'm really bummed that there are like three creatures in Kaladesh with Rebel in their name and none of them are Rebel creature types.
Oh, man. That's so sad. Like the problem with Rebels is as a mechanic, it's like really oppressive. Like, it's one of the great standard mistake decks that's out there.
Because it's super linear and just like...
Every game play, every deck. If it's good, every game is going to be exactly the same for that deck. Yeah, and if right. it's bad, then why did you
Makes sense.
Come out with it? It's the same reason that like some other mechanics that I'm not coming off the top of my head just don't get reprinted because there's like, there's no way to make this exciting. Because
sure.
it's a Storm. Storm yeah. is a great one where it's like...
Either it's a terrible card or it's busted.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no middle ground, and Rebels kind of has a similar feel to that. And I liked, like, in Modern Masters, it was great. And I would be cool to get Rebel creature types that then play well with, like, Lynessa and older, or not Lynessa.
Lynn Civic.
Lynn Civic and older cards. So I think, yeah, you've now got that in my head. Wonderful.
So this is what I say we do. This is what I think the correct move right now is. I think we should pretty much stay away from the old sets. Let's touch on them briefly. Like, I just... Really quickly, one at a time, till we get to Modern, at which point we can actually talk about sets that there's a realistic possibility to go back to.
Let's make from Mirage on, because everything yeah, before that, that's where like blocks started. Block start. Everything before that is like Antiquities, and I don't yep. even know what plane Antiquities takes place on. And
it takes place on Dominaria.
Okay, cool.
And effectively, those old original sets like Legends and Antiquities, if they were ever going to go back to anything like that, would just be Time Spiral 2, which we'll get to in a second.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right, starting out with Mirage Block. Which Mirage Visions and...
Is on the African continent of Dominaria.
Of Jamura, which is on Dominaria.
What's the third? Mirage Visions and...
And Weatherlight.
Weatherlight, that's right.
Which was technically the beginning of the Weatherlight saga.
Yeah.
So that's just like dragons and flanking.
It's more Dominaria stuff. Like, flanking would be cool. Flanking is the one mechanic that I wish would come back more. And I get why they don't like it, because it's self-referential. But I don't know if I agree.
Yes.
Yeah, I think a renamed Bushido is more likely to come back before we see flanking.
Right.
Yeah, Bushido's cool. I like flanking more than Bushido. Bushido's a board mechanic. I get like why it's like a stable mechanic that they wish they named more generically because it just is probably useful in other places. Kind of like it's like good Rampage.
And it'll come back. They've said numerous times like we're going to rename it something else and it'll
right,
come
right,
back
because right.
it's a really easy to understand mechanic like prowess.
So one thing you guys mentioned is that Dominaria is like that's like a plane that a lot of these take place on. So that's stuff that if you were going to go back to, you could combine a lot of these old sets. From Mirage, flavor-wise or card-wise, I just sort of like the dragons thing is the most distinctive thing I can think of, and they've done that, so I don't see any reason to like make reference to that. That seems kind of irrelevant to me.
Yeah, I think the Mirage block, it's proto-block. I think if we went back to Dominaria, there might be like, dude, from this part of the Mirage like world, and that would be the... like it'll be a little bit more...
I mean,
Time Spiral will make references to different locations,
yes.
but it'll be more like how in Constant Tarkir, there's people named like this guy from this part of this plane that we, or like actually Theros better because Akrios Horse Riot, you know, like
sure,
yeah.
right. So like whenever we do return to Dominaria, Jamura is bound to show up because we'll probably see Teferi and see what he's up to, and Teferi's from
that
Jamura
part, right.
and he's sort of like a patron wizard of the whole continent. So
I personally have a penchant for the next block a little bit. This is of the old ones. I think Tempest Stronghold Exodus is the one that like. And they've done some of this because we've gotten Slivers back.
Yeah, Slivers are now around, and that's kind of the big...
That was the popular thing. I kind of have, like, I love the Skyship Weatherlight. I love Gerard, like, some of those characters. So I think there's a part of me that's just like, if there was some way to do that, to go back in time, anything, that's a cool thing to me. I would like the idea of seeing Gerard again and seeing the Skyship Weatherlight.
Well, they're all dead.
Well...
Yeah,
right.
But I mean,
there's a few characters who were not killed off.
This is
off.
Fiction, after yeah. all, so we can do what we
well,
want.
One, I love the idea of like going back in time, like even if they did decide to do a supplementary set, like one that just took and put a bunch of visions of from the Weatherlight saga or
yeah.
whatever, and made its own like either a supplementary set that's meant to be drafted by itself, or have them show up in like a commander set or something like that. Like that would be cool. There are a few characters that survived through the end of Apocalypse, like specifically Squee did,
right.
and Captain Sisse and Tongarth all are still alive at the end. In fact, I remember one of the great story disappointments is like Apocalypse, the most popular third block set of all time. I remember playing during Apocalypse. It was a really cool set.
Is that still true?
Huh? I think it's, or I think of...
Of that time.
Of that time. Of the pre-modern era. But it may still be one of like, adjusted for or whatever.
Sure.
Anyway, but Apocalypse
reference that people don't get.
Oh, and it might be, and it might not be by sales, but I think by on popularity metrics.
Sure.
It is still their most popular third.
Well,
third
you, you got enemy colors.
It was the first time you got enemy, and then it was filled with things like Pernicious Deed and Vindicate and Spiritmonger, like all these awesome cards.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, Apocalypse like destroyed the world, but they let everyone know that the Skyship Weatherlight survives, and Sisay is still captaining it, and Tongarth and Squee are still on board. And then we all learn through InQuest magazine that the next set is going to be called Odyssey. And I was like, yes, they're going to be like time plane, you know, shaping around in the Weatherlight, like going on an Odyssey from plane to plane. And no, it takes place all in one city on Dominaria. Like all of Odyssey is like a boring set.
Well, and I mean, pretty much from that point on, it's like they're very. That's when they start doing the every block is a mechanical. I mean, we skipped Urza's block, I guess, which is the next one, which was a mechanical one. But
that's what I was just gonna say. Of the old stuff, in terms of like just the old blocks, the most beloved is absolutely Urza's block. So that's
or the hated.
Well, but just in terms of iconic cards, powerful cards, the Urza's block is the one. So if you were gonna do one and you were gonna really try to go heavy on it, to, in my opinion, even if you had to get away from story, because I understand it's difficult to do, that's the one. So that's the one I want to talk about the most. The others we can pretty much skip
past.
Well,
but if you get rid of story from that block, it's an enchantment-themed block that had a bunch of way too broken artifact cards. That, like, from a mechanic perspective, it's like a bad set. From a story perspective, it's cool because it's about the Urza's fight. You know, it's about Urza, and everyone loves Urza.
When I say get away from the story, I mean, I have no idea what the story is, and you're trying to explain to me that the old stories are, like, irrelevant by today's standards.
Kind of. I mean, like, I think if we go back to Dominaria, dealing with some of that old story stuff is what you would deal with. But from a mechanic perspective, Urza's block comes with either a weird enchantment theme that no one remembers or the theme of, oh, there's like 12 really broken combo cards. And that's not a theme. That's just Wizards made a huge mistake.
True.
And I think the main thing is because almost every set before the modern era takes place on Dominaria, and then we have a button on Dominaria as a place in Time Spiral, which takes place in the modern era. That's what makes story-wise everything before Time Spiral's like before the modern era somewhat irrelevant because we know we're caught up on what's going on by the time we get to Time Spiral.
And it like they basically did a hard reboot of 1,000 years later. Planeswalkers are completely different types of characters, and everything else, you know, we're just going to kind of start over, and Dominaria has gone through an apocalypse. So the next time we're going to go there, it's going back to post-apocalyptic world, and that's kind of what the theme would be or be close to and dealing with what that means.
So maybe we should talk about Dominaria first since it's so much
I think that, that wrap up. Cycling and Echo we've seen, so we don't really, I mean, I guess Echo they wanted to go heavy on, but it's not great, so I don't think that's awesome.
And like when you get through, we kind of talked about this before a little bit, is from this point on, every set was kind of much more mechanically themed. And each of those we've now adopted into a new, more modern and more friendly to a modern audience version of those blocks, but with a different plane.
So highlights, anything from Mercadian Mask block? We mentioned the Rebels and Mercenaries. That's whatever. Prophecy, unless player pays this, then something happens.
Oh, yeah, no.
The untapped lands thing, all that's pretty bad, right?
Yeah.
Free spells. They're not going to do that again.
They will. I feel like every time they do it, it's broken.
Well, no, but I feel like Mercadian Mask came very close to making free spells okay.
Yeah.
Because,
true.
Like, they have misdirection, you know, and, like, certain
unmask snuff out. There's a few that are really bad, but like, days. But also, there's a lot that are, like, not that powerful.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. I think Wizards will always be tempted to revisit free spells.
They did.
And they do.
Because all the Ambusher cards like that, those are throwbacks.
Yeah. It'll happen.
And then Invasion gave us Kicker, which is now so good that they have to break Kicker apart into several.
Just generic.
Yeah, Kicker. I think I can say that I think Kicker was a mistake. From a way too generic and can do everything.
And they've updated
space.
It.
They agree.
If you think about being a designer, being 10 years into Magic existing, and you come up with Kicker and how versatile it is, you're like, oh my God, guys, look, I've solved Magic.
Right. I think just in general, we've seen all of the things that made that block special, like a heavy multicolor thing we've seen a bunch of times now. Kicker we've seen a bunch of times now. That was further exploration of the same characters that we were talking about. All the reasons that I was saying Tempest block was awesome character-wise, same thing. So yeah, I think you just skip past that. You get into Odyssey Torment Judgment, which is basically like a black-themed set. There's the Atog thing, which is kind of like a funny...
I would like to see Atog's return.
I was kind of bummed. Like, I dig the Gremlin design or whatever for Kaladesh, but I really thought it would be cool if it was a whole plane plagued with little Atogs running around.
I agree. I think that was actually... not a mistake, because Gremlins are cool, but I would have rathered Atogs.
Yeah, I don't think I'm trying to think if there's anything else in Odyssey Torment Judgment. I mean, there's just the black theme and the sacrifice.
And
theme.
They had and well, they had Flashback and Threshold, which Flashback has come back many times, but Threshold has now been sort of turned into Delirium.
True.
Threshold they like had it was a little too swingy for when it was good and bad, so I think Delirium is I think Threshold is another kind of kicker effect. Threshold specifically is a subset of what a kick of what that kicker would be, which is this thing turns on when effect happens. And they're going to do it in different ways, and we're going to see forever different types of threshold mechanics, and Delirium being the most recent one.
Yep. The next set being this, and this one is the closest because the last with the old card face is Onslaught Legion Scourge, and this has actually had quite a bit of reference because the fetch lands came there, we got them again later.
Yep. Morph is the big
morph
overall,
we got again.
And that's been applied into like the what was the set before Onslaught. That we just talked about?
Odyssey.
That set has been morphed into Innistrad, and this set has kind of been morphed into Tarkir, where it was tribal and
right.
And
we
morph.
And we morph. Got and we've had a second in the Lorwyn block. We had another tribal set. So I mean, this is
and the last sets both theme around dragons.
Yeah, there
Scourge
are
and dragons of Tarkir.
You
except
mentioned
Scourge
Kamal
is like dragons.
There are some characters from this block definitely that get referenced though that people do remember pretty fondly.
Yeah.
Again, this one doesn't strike me as just.
Go.
This doesn't have the flavor of like those earlier sets that's like we have to go back. So this goes directly then into the new card face. The next set is Mirrodin.
Yeah.
So this is where it all starts.
But my favorite memory of Kamal is still double clicking him on Modo.
Why is that?
Because
he kills himself if you beat the red Kamal who casts Lightning Bolt when you tap him.
Kamal, punch yourself in my face. Yes, my lord.
Does he cost six and taps for three to deal?
No, he taps six.
He's a 6-mana, 6/1 with haste.
That's right. Yeah, he's lightning bolt creature haste, but he has attack for six.
Yeah, he's ball lightning and lightning bolt as a legendary creature. Yeah.
But if you double click him on Modo, he just dies. Yeah. So sad.
So Mirrodin. So let's cover old Mirrodin. The fact that we've already gone back to Mirrodin, and what it would be like to go back to Mirrodin again. Go.
So. Obviously, the big thing with the second Mirrodin is they like, kind of got rid of some of the mechanics. They focus very much more on artifacts with colored activation spells that kind of keep the color pie around. So those are the kind of the things they fixed. But the big thing that happened was New Phyrexia. So Mirrodin is no longer Mirrodin. Mirrodin is dead. So if we were to return to it again, we'd be going back to New Phyrexia, which I think is the set I'm most interested in returning to. Obviously, from a mechanical perspective, the big things are like Proliferate or Infect or Extort.
I think Living Weapon is like Living Weapon and Metalcraft were
The other. But Metalcraft was a Mirrodin mechanic.
And we've also kind of had Metalcraft return a little bit.
Like Kaladesh. Kaladesh had
Metalcraft.
Well, it had Metalcraft in the design file forever, and then they just were like, oh, it's not. We have too many mechanics. Let's just take this out and have the few cards that are super relevant to check how many artifacts you have. Let's make it a little bit variable and just not have it a named mechanic.
Yeah,
right.
I love Proliferate. That's one of my all-time favorite mechanics. I think it's awesome. I do think there's a little bit of a sense with Proliferate, something similar, because they just they have a few cards now that they've done with it basically references Proliferate without calling it Proliferate.
Yeah.
And it seems like just what you said with Metalcraft, it was the same kind of thing. Do we really want to just throw this as a blanket, another keyword people have to remember, or there's like that 3/3 in green that kind of is a Proliferate card.
Mm-hmm. I think.
Well, I think it's important that like Proliferate is a mechanic that does not necessarily have to be tied to New Phyrexia or Mirrodin as a plane. Like I could see Proliferate being shifted to show up again on another plane. Like it was a very successful mechanic, and I know it ranks really high in Mark Rosewater's eyes. So that like. It's a very good chance we'll come back to it, but it doesn't necessarily have to be one.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Living Weapon, I feel people will expect to see Living Weapon when we go back to New
Phyrexia.
Yeah,
of all the mechanics from the Phyrexian side, especially, Living Weapon is the one that is the most flavorful, the most unique to them, and while also being not really printable anywhere else, but not too powerful to not print again. Like, Phyrexian Mana is obviously a big one, but I don't think they'll ever revisit it. If they may revisit it in a
supplementary set or
something. Not even supplementary, but in essence, kind of the same way that they didn't revisit Annihilator with Eldrazi, but there is an Eldrazi that vaguely has Annihilator.
We'll get
like one card that's you may pay X life instead of paying the colored mana on this card.
Which is, I think, smarter and more fair because it doesn't box them into having to do something really broken over and over again.
They can
do one really powerful card, they can make it mythic, whatever.
Elishnorn could be like five. White, pay two life for every two life you pay when you cast this. She costs one less white.
Or something, yeah. And if they really want to go heavy, if they wanted to go like ham on old mechanics like that and make four cards with it, just wait for Time Spiral 2 and then just do it then.
Yeah.
We're going to do it, guys.
So, I mean, we've talked about this on the cast before. My big prediction for New Phyrexia's return is, from the story perspective and mechanic perspective, is it's about Venser being Phyrexianized and creating planar portals to release the Phyrexians on the planes in general. Because I think you don't bring a bad guy like that and then just lock them into one plane. You want them to be able to be multiplanar. And Venser, being a guy who literally was developing planar portals before he developed his spark and afterwards, being the perfect kind of person that is literally his dead body is in the like very center of the land of Phyrexia.
And he died
in the throne room.
And
of
he died. And Karn's Venser died saving Karn.
Yes, so
which I know.
Yeah.
and I mean, I think something now that we're in this kind of era talking about which planeswalkers we'll probably be getting back in these sets, I think a Karn return is very apparent. I think a Koth return is going to be pretty handedly obvious, and then some amount of Gatewatch probably, because though they're going to focus on them less, I think we'll still get one or two a set. There's not, it won't be all four every set,
sure,
every block.
It seems pretty likely that we will go back to Mirrodin at some point. Like, this one seems like there's a high likelihood because...
Well, it ended on a giant cliffhanger.
Now, the one thing that I'd be interested to know is whether or not we go back to New Phyrexia the plane, or whether the next time we see the Phyrexians, it is them invading a hitherto unseen plane.
Well, that was what I was hoping happened on Kaladesh. Though I guess the reason they made Kaladesh is they wanted an artifact plane that wasn't overrun by Phyrexians.
Right. And so I don't think they want to necessarily spoil that by having that be the plane. But they could invent a new plane that has some sort of like flavor identity we haven't seen yet and have the Phyrexians come there. And that would allow the Gatewatch to be able to defeat the Phyrexians without destroying them. Like, they could just defeat their invasion of new plane.
Well, which I think them losing to the Phyrexians the next time we see them again, in the sense that they do get to open that portal to other planes, and then at that point they're just like, they're out, and now that's a whole other multi-block story arc that we get to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I think they're more interesting than Eldrazi, because Eldrazi are really hard. I understand how you kill a zombie. I can see Chandra can kill Phyrexians all day long, and it makes total sense to me. The fact that she killed the like Eldrazi Titans by shooting
two
really hyper firebolts at them is like... Okay.
It's like pretty, it's like pretty Dragon Ball Z. So all right. So that's basically Mirrodin. That's where we stand with Mirrodin to some degree. I think there's a high likelihood we go back to that. That seems like something that they will do for
totally.
Sure. From there, we go directly into the next set, which is my least favorite modern era set. By the way, I just want to make a note that Kaladesh is basically just Lorwyn meets Mirrodin. I think that's clear, right?
Why Lorwyn?
Because all of the silly-looking characters and, like, village people and, like, all the strange...
Oh, it's like it's more fantasy happy land.
Are you being
land.
Dwarfist?
Is that, no, it's just like... It's just
dwarves.
Like,
it's
Kithkins
dwarves.
And dwarves. Yeah. These squat little people, they upset Ben Bateman.
No, the whole, like, the whole, like, Hobbiton sort of feel that Lorwyn has that a lot of people were, like, not into, that they kind of rectified with Shadowmoor, but, like, just not, is literally just, like, Mirrodin meets that is what Kaladesh is. It's that. It looks just like it.
I mean, it's a happy... artifact.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. So anyway, but next set is Kamigawa, which I hate, and I can't imagine we're ever going to go back there.
They've said we were.
Going back.
Yeah, so we're never going back to Kamigawa. The best we're going to get is they are going to eventually go back to a top-down Japanese world, and it'll just be not Kamigawa.
And I look forward to that because they've mentioned that, you know, there are two ways...
They've said they're never going back there. We're all in agreement there.
Oh yeah. So they were saying that like the way that people had really sort of expected and that their expectations are somewhat subverted with Kamigawa is that people were kind of looking more for like a Toshiro Mifune, Akira Kurosawa, like feudal Japan, high samurai romance style.
Right.
And instead of this sort of kind of twisted version of like dark Shinto.
Yeah, they went for the religious angle that is not a well-known part of the whole experience versus going more towards like all of the Americanized pop culture parts of what Japanese culture is, which goes everything from anime to samurai movies to ninjas to like that kind of thing. And they did a little bit of it as it got better because they introduced samurai and ninjas, but the whole spirits versus arcane magic thing were both very parasitic while also not being something people recognized. And I think now we're a little bit better because just Miyazaki has done a better job of kind of expanding sure. what our representation of the like the spirit world relationship to Japanese culture. But even then, I think it was a weird direction to go down.
Agreed. Yeah. So yeah, so from that set is pretty much off the table, and that would be something that only would get referenced in some sort of Time Spiral 2-esque set. The next one we have is Ravnica. So we're going to cover Ravnica, RTR, and then the possible return to return.
So right. we had this conversation last night. I think there's a lot of things that can happen with Ravnica. The biggest mistake was Niv-Mizzet not becoming the Guild Pack. Jace becoming the Guild Pack is one of, I think, the biggest plot mistakes they've made.
And worst cards.
Oh, yeah. And yeah.
I think it's
worse than Tybalt. I think it's the worst Planeswalker.
Yeah, we were talking about because if you make a Tybalt deck and you hit Tybalt on turn two, you probably can't be beaten. If you're playing a Jace the Living Guild Pack deck and you hit Jace the Living Guild Pack on turn five, what are you playing? What is this terrible deck?
Doesn't do anything.
Yeah. And the fact that, like, Jace is running around on other planes, saving other planes, and is currently also the president of Ravnica.
it feels like the idea to make him president of Ravnica came about before they came up with, oh, yeah, we should come up with the Avengers. Like,
right.
And so I don't think they would have done that now, and especially not in a set called Dragon's Maze. Like, it should have ended with President Niv-Mizzet becoming president of...
Yeah, it's fan servicey, but it's what everyone kind of wanted. I don't know why they like just avoided that as their option. And it puts them in a weird position returning. The other big issue returning is, and this is more of a mechanical one, is how do you do Ravnica with a block and a half, with a set and a half, or one set and one small set, and that's it? Like, how do you fit all 10 guilds into that format?
I think you can definitely do it. I just think that it's a much more like premium level set. So I think you have to make it special, and it's overcomplicated, and it's like,
I mean, you can do all 10, which like they've done a lot of draft formats now that do focus on 10 different color pair draft archetypes. It's just, you have to like really lessen how much representation you have. You could also do two large sets. I mean, like, yeah. It might be the first time they have to do a second large set, and that's the one easy solution.
I think that's the easy solution, and I feel like it's the solution that will get the least amount of complaints from fans, because, you know, the Ravnica guilds are much beloved. They're probably some of the most beloved things in all of Magic's creative side. And, you know, everybody has, like, their favorite guild.
Right.
And if your guild ends up getting the short shrift for whatever reason, like, no amount of, oh, but for mechanics or for the draft environment, like, no amount of that will ameliorate your bad feelings. So,
I mean, you don't think that you could do five mechanics, one for each guild, and do five in one set and five in the other? Like, that's...
Oh, yeah. But I'm saying, I think the only way you can accommodate 10 fully realized mechanics across 10 guilds is if you have big set, and they're five and five.
When it's big set, fair. Small set, I think what you could do is 6-4, but I have no idea what a 6-guild draft format looks like.
Yeah, I think you're dead right. You have to go big. But that's not that crazy. They've done stuff like that before.
Yeah. 3 years ago, not crazy. Today, crazy. 2 years from now, not crazy.
Yeah. They change their policies like every year.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah.
So all right. So that's how you would do that. That's how you would do that. So if we were gonna go back there, you would, I guess, have to go large. In terms of story, is there anything super, super relevant you guys think would happen that you would need to see happen?
I think Niv-Mizzet takes the... I think they like they have to actively deal with the fact that Jace gets kicked out from being like, president.
speaking of President Niv-Mizzet, I think it'd be actually a really interesting thing if, Niv-Mizzet's smart enough to know that Jace is the Living Guild Pact and that Jace is a Planeswalker. Like, Niv-Mizzet, it's been shown in the storyline that he knows... that planeswalkers exist, and he's somewhat bummed that he's not one. And he's so part some. I think it's implied that grand experiment that the Izzet are working on is trying to figure out how to, if you can manufacture a planeswalker spark, and if so, can Niv-Mizzet get one? Like, I think that's what Niv-Mizzet is sort of working on. It'd be cool if the plot for the next return to Ravnica is him essentially using the legal system of Ravnica to be like, you can't be the Living Guild Pact. You're not even from here. Like,
right.
if it was a bit of like an intrigue based set where we get to just see what the 10 guilds are up to, but like the story is the people
of
Ravnica
cards, but...
demanding that they get self governance.
So you're
something.
Basically saying it's some sort of legal drama.
Sure.
I would be fine with House of Cards, but where Niv-Mizzet is, well, what's his
wearing like six suits?
What's the actor's
Kevin
name?
Spacey?
Kevin Spacey. Yeah, Niv-Mizzet is Kevin Spacey.
In the Magic movie, Kevin Spacey's got a voice. Niv-Mizzet.
Yeah,
That's pretty sick, actually. Yeah, it's like a very funny idea. I had an entire tangent because I went to Disneyland on Friday, where I was like on anchor, you know, the thing I do.
Yeah,
I was like, if you were gonna base an entire Magic set around one of either the lands or rides at Disneyland, like you were just gonna get to start from there and just expand it out, which one would it be? And I had a lot of thoughts about just like weird abstract concepts, but this is a conversation for another time. We will run out of time.
Pirates of the Caribbean, because we don't have a pirate plane yet.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. For me, Tomorrowland was the one where I was thinking some sort of Sky Captain of the World of Tomorrow, like type esque, you know. But there's elements of all of us that have shown up in Magic already, it's not like all
it's
unique.
Kaladesh a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, but that's cool. Airships and stuff. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
All right, so that's where we end Ravnica, which jumps us directly into.
Well, the last two things at Ravnica. One, which planeswalkers show up? I mean, Ralzeric.
Ralzeric comes back.
Liliana and Gideon.
Do they give Ralzeric an actual good card?
Well,
probably.
I mean, I think
he's
also,
popular. But
he's like, don't you hate him? Isn't he your least favorite planeswalker ever?
I've gone on. No, maybe.
You
maybe
like really hate Ralzeric? Yeah.
Oh, I love. Well, I think I hate the card. Ralzeric. I love Ralzeric the character. He's sweet. He has lightning. Yeah, definitely a cool card. From an art perspective.
the funniest thing I could think about Ralzeric is Ralzeric came out right around the time Conspiracy 1 came out shortly thereafter, and Ralzeric and Dak Faden were both are like in the public mind, and somebody on Twitter said, Ralzeric and Dak Faden sound like two heels in a tag team match in the WWE.
Yeah.
Like that Ralzeric and Dak Faden, you know, they come down with their like rave pants on, like, we're gonna, you know, beat these guys up.
Sweet.
But yeah, I think he's just so much worse than a Johnny Vengeant and does everything exactly the same.
Yeah, he's really bad. So next up, we have my favorite set ever, which is Time Spiral Block. So let's...
Thing on Return to Ravnica.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry. Do they come with all brand new mechanics for each guild, or do they return? Or what I think would be interesting is if this one was a mix of different mechanics from both blocks and those all being returned.
Yeah, like it was a successful one, like give Convoke back to Selesnya, but Unleash for Rakdos.
Yeah.
Bring back Haunt, said no one ever.
But Extort's really popular.
But Extort's dope.
Extort was great.
I think the biggest one is that Dredge would probably need it. I think you'd have to give some new ones, and Green-Black would be one I would want to maybe do, because Dredge is too strong and never going to be reprinted again. Scavenge was kind of really boring and not that well received, so I kind of want a new one. But Detain.
Maybe they could get a different mechanic that is a reprint, but it's new for them, like Unearth.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Detain played really, really well in Limited. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like Detain.
So, all right. So Time Spiral, I'm just going to rattle through this because we are running short on time, and this is an abstract one because this kind of references a lot of what we talked about in the first part.
Yeah.
It's going back to the Dominaria stuff. So there's a few things that are super relevant about Time Spiral. Number one, if you wanted to do a Time Spiral-esque set, we get that every 2 years anyway with the Modern Masters reprint sets. So if you wanted to make it in as far as like a standard environment goes, you're paying attention to basically nostalgia and trying to figure out what made these sets so much fun without just totally jamming it down our throats and overcomplicating it. So you do have to choose some characters, and you get a great swath of characters to choose from because it's like all of those weird new legends they created for the Time Spiral block. You can go anybody from like the grandeur creatures like Korlash or like Ithai Arcanus. Like there's a lot of places you can go if you just want to have characters. Also, you get planeswalkers now, which is interesting. You can basically be like, okay, I want to take these old familiar faces and make a few planeswalkers out of them, which I don't know how that even works.
Well, so there's some planeswalkers. Well, Teferi's alive. So Giora is alive.
And there's been a Teferi planeswalker, unless I'm mistaken, in a commander
set.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right?
And it was referencing him before the events of Time Spiral. Because the events of Time Spiral make him lose his planeswalker spark.
Yeah, which he can get back. That's happened.
Theoretically, he could get it back. I mean, we are talking about fiction. They can make up the rules.
Exactly. Especially in that era, they've retconned things. So I think we would get some characters back. I think it'll be less Time Spiral. If we return the Dominaria, which is what this would really be, I don't think it'll be as self-referential as the old ones. And some of these characters they showed Ith Arcanus because it was the past, and we're just showing old cards.
And he's a reference to Maze of Ith.
But he's like definitely not alive anymore. And so it's interesting to see where they would go on that end. But I think the big focus that they're setting up as a return is the Raven Man, which is kind of Liliana's big villain.
Okay.
Beyond her just having to kill a bunch of demons for funsies. And by funsies, I mean to get rid of a curse. Yeah. Yes. But yeah, the Raven Man is one of the more interesting characters that they've been like slowly setting up. And I think that's what the main plot will be, of them returning. And that's kind of the big storyline there. So I'd be interested to see what happens.
It would definitely be a Liliana focused storyline, her returning home to figure out like some who weird thing has gone down in Urborg.
Though I'd be sweet to see, like, speaking of the Phyrexians being unleashed, them being unleashed back on the Dominaria, and then it just be like Venser, zombie portal Venser, fighting Teferi, who's like fate. It seems sweet.
Maybe that could be an interesting next time we see them, and that could be a really affirming Liliana's place in the Gatewatch. Since right now she's sort of like, yeah, this is, you know, I could maybe manipulate these four adults into helping me kill some demons.
But she's like, romantically into Jace, and yeah.
Yeah, but it could be like, oh, now her home plane is threatened yet again.
Yeah.
Like, and she wasn't alive during the first Phyrexian invasion of Dominaria, but like now it could maybe be like for the first time ever she feels like concern for a plane because it's her home.
Okay, so most popular character to come out of Time Spiral block, Teferi and Joyra.
Yeah.
Joyra Venser. Probably is the and Venser. Venser we've gotten back though.
Yeah.
And Teferi had gotten reprint basically in a supplemental set. Mm-hmm. So Joyra is the one. And Joyra then references the mechanic that is one of my favorites that I've heard they'll probably never go back to, which is suspend counters.
Yeah.
Vanishing is less relevant. Vanishing is fine, but suspend particularly is awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm a really big fan of. Is there any way we would ever get suspend again?
I think in a world where madness has been reprinted, suspend can come back. I think suspend of all the time spiral mechanics was like the least problematic.
It's grown in popularity as well. I think people like suspend more than they used to.
I think it's a super, super interesting place for design, especially because it gave something like processors, for instance, are like a really fascinating interaction there. And the exile as a zone. Exile zone is like a zone that has now been referenced and they've like done more cool things with. I like that. And I like that if Time Spiral now is not so, that suspend is not as parasitic as it once was. It now interacts more favorably with other parts. So I do think that going back there would be great. Also, because a lot of those cards are popular, it would be great to have some more cards that interacted with the old ones that you could start to figure out, okay, can I like abuse this? Like, I don't need to just be playing Rift Elemental as my only engine, you know?
Though I can see it being more of a supplemental bring
back. Mechanic,
like,
yeah.
It small is really, set reprint. Really a big barrier to entry to new players. Just kind of, there's like a bunch of weird random corner cases that come with suspend that we don't realize because we're not playing with it in a draft format. We're playing it with, oh, I know how Ancestral Vision works. I know how these larger, greater, the ones that we know about, but like,
it was a lot of fun in Modern Masters when suspend was one of, was the gruel mechanic or whatever. Like, that was really,
it was
red green, right?
Red green white. There were white ones too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Ancestral Visions came back.
And blue.
Yeah, I mean, like they put it in all colors, but it was the draft archetype for if you're drafting.
Oh, maybe.
Green.
Yeah,
got it. Yeah,
it was. No. I like suspend. Don't get me wrong. I just think we're also all very good Magic players, and we don't like Modern Masters is really fun for us. But if you're a brand new player or even the first level, like Modern Masters is cool from a value perspective, but like suspend is a lot.
Yeah,
I think if you were going to make any time referential set, you could make suspend work. I don't think suspend is that problematic. I think vanishing is harder. I think suspend you could do.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue for a time spiral return is more that I don't think it'll be time focused. It's going to be more Dominaria focused, and that's a different kind of deal.
So let's keep going. Yeah. So from Time Spiral, we go directly into Lorwyn, Shadowmoor, Eventide.
Which is another Kamigawa set that we will never return to.
Morningtide, which I find more interesting that you say that, because there are elements to that whole block that I think are much, much more well-liked than Kamigawa. I
totally agree.
The tribal aspect, we will see another tribal set, I'm sure. That's
we have Innistrada's tribal. That'll happen regularly.
So that's not a thing.
And I could see Changeling as a mechanic coming back in the... I could see Changeling coming back as, again, like a glue mechanic the next time they do a really heavy tribal-focused world, because it was such an elegant solution at the time.
Because Lorwyn, from a mechanic perspective, is what informed them that they need New World Order. Like, it's pretty much single-handedly informed them that New World Order is something they needed to create. After Time Spiral block, which was, oh god, all the mechanics, to Lorwyn block, which is like, oh god, every single creature in play affects every other creature in this weird, odd way.
I'll just give you a two-word title here. Silvergill Dowser.
Oh, yeah.
Silverkill Dowser, which is like a common for two mana in the draft formats that references both Merfolk and Fairies and has like an onboard combat trick.
Yeah, it taps to give target creature minus X minus O, where X is the number of Fairies and Merfolk you control.
It's so preposterous.
It's so amazing.
And every single creature had an ability like that.
Yeah.
Like several of them
referenced two creature types, so you're having to pay attention to, like, how many goblins and fairies do I have?
Like,
is there a Kithkin in play?
And beyond that, like you mentioned earlier, your problem with, not problem with Kaladesh, but the really friendly happy-go-luckiness of one set, yeah, and like the overly complicated of an entire set of hybrid cards. Like, there's like, they did a lot of things wrong all at once.
Yeah.
So they just, Lorwyn isn't as popular as other places. I think we have a better chance of going to places that take individual tribes from there and use them without doing all of them at
100%.
Once.
And yeah, we've also, and some of them, like, untap, we're probably not going to see again. It's a weird mechanic.
Yeah.
It's super complicated.
Well, that's what Inspired, they like did Inspired as untapped for a while, and then it just became Inspired because they realized untap is just really not easy.
The untap symbol
off
just feels like a continuation of the complication of Time Spiral.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty much that's the opinion there. I mean, I think what you notice is the exact, if you cut off right here and you go forward from this point, what you do start to realize is, they've taken the best elements of a lot of these successful sets, and they've already made other sets out of them.
Yeah.
And that's already happened. So, because this is still back in like 2009.
Well, I think the following set is the next stage of design.
This is 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. They refer to the stages of design. So, Alara Block is the next transition stage, and Alara is the bubble return set, and it is even like on the, I think there's a storm scale for sets we're likely to return. And it's always kind of here or there on whether we'll return to it, because there are issues with it and there are benefits to it. I don't know. I don't know if we're returning to Alara Block. I think as a gold set, they enjoy Ravnica more.
Yeah.
I think we're like, for instance, we'll get to it, Khanzatark here, and a third return to Innistrad are possibly all more likely than a return to Alara Block.
I never get the sense that Alara Block is filled with storylines, characters, themes, mechanics that people are like fiending for.
Yeah.
I always get the sense that there's like little bits and pieces that are well liked by like Magic diehards, but for the most part, it's remembered as like a little too heavily multicolored. This set is also remembered as the second Planeswalker set, so it's like sort of where Planeswalkers became a normal thing,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to just a new thing. You can see it in like a Sark card like Sarkhan Vol, where you're like, this just doesn't really make any sense yet. It's not that good. It's too expensive.
And
like,
the best parts of the set have kind of been taken out and applied to other places. Like, we've gotten, you know, Tezzeret is carrying forward the Ethereum kind of ideals and is doing a little bit on, you know, other artifact sets, and colored artifacts are showing up in other places. You know, the Naya is just big green monster dudes, and there are other places that that's popular. Grixis, like, each of these, from a mechanical perspective, can be done in cooler ways in other places as a more solid idea. And they kind of ended on an apocalypse for them. Like, and Nicol Bolas is the big one, and he is on Amaket now.
Well, like an anti-apocalypse. The whole world came back together.
Well, but didn't it, like, well, I guess...
It came back together and everything became overlapped. I mean, from a design standpoint, like from a creative design standpoint, I'd love to be able to see Fractured Alara again, because I think the five individual planes had a lot of really cool creative work put into them. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Naya was answering the question of, like, what is a world without blue and black mana in it like? You know, and I think it's kind of interesting. They're like, oh, it's this Mesoamerican, and there's ziggurats, and humans and Nakadal follow around these god monsters worshipping them and stuff. Like, that's, like, there's cool stuff going on each plane. And so if they ever returned Alara, I'd love to dig into, like, those cool little pockets of the three color shards.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, yeah, Lara to me feels like not, that's on the storm scale, not that high.
It's not.
Because it's not the mechanics that made it, it's not the mechanics that really stood out. Like, I think it's the
shards and the color combination. Yeah. And I think that we'll return to it more to kind of cement that. And I don't know when we'll need to do that. I mean, I do know story perspective wise, I think it ended with like Bant being overrun and destroyed by Grixis army, zombie armies.
Oh, it's total war happening now, as all five shards collide with each other.
A vaguely interesting story as well. Like, I would be cool to see that war, and then maybe, you know, it ends by them separating the planes again or finding harmony. But it'll be interesting. But like, that's kind of what the gold set was. Yeah,
it's funny because Zendikar is like the it's like. awesome, yet like only because of Eldrazi. And now we've gone there twice, and in both times, like the best part is really Eldrazi. Like a lot
oh,
of
I don't
they,
know.
They tried to go back to allies a second time, and it just sort of was just like, who cares? In a lot of cases, it really just feels like the Eldrazi dominate the entirety of these sets, and I don't know what the point of going back is unless you're just doing an Eldrazi set again.
I don't know if I, because like Zendikar had two sides to it. Eldrazi weren't actually that popular. The Eldrazi set was a popular draft format.
And the characters, the Eldrazi.
And the character Eldrazi are popular, but they're popular more because they're just overtly extremely powerful.
Right.
And Emrakul is Emrakul for all the reasons that Emrakul is Emrakul. But like the mistake they've said is like one of the big problems that we did when we returned to Zendikar is we made it really the return to Rise of Eldrazi. And what people wanted was, you know, elf and merfolk tribal you know, and I think they made a lot
of
mistrups, allies, and like all the adventure stuff and the traps and all that kind of stuff, and landfall being an aggressive format. Like, there's stuff that it was doing that they liked. And I think they just, like, not at every level, but in so many levels, made big missteps. For instance, Zendikar, you know, the ally mechanics in both sets became just like really generic and boring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the first set, it was Rally, which was just, whenever this or any ally, just this effect happens to everyone. So why do you really care how many allies you're playing? And then in the second set, it was very much just like, oh, we tap them and they do a thing for some reason. And
cohort
why,
or whatever. It's
yeah, cohort. Why are they allies? Why don't they have a watermark? And if I were to do it again.
Plus the ally as a creature type seemed to be given out so willy-nilly.
Yeah, they're just totally
like,
random.
There were like five different cards depicting cores on a glider, and like, two out of five of them were allies, and three out of five of them were just core soldiers.
We also, though, enter a period here that is unique because this is the first set with masterpieces. And so it...
Battle for Zendikar.
It now creates this weird thing where, like, opening Magic sets represent something a little different, and the special quality of certain cards now is skewed because we see so many more of them.
Yeah, but I don't think masterpieces made this set less popular. I think the processor Eldrazi mechanic... Well, first off, I think the big mistake is that Kozilek's mechanic should have been the big thing. Like, we've added a sixth color to Magic is super exciting.
It is really weird how they buried the lead on the sixth color of Magic. Like, that should have been like, oh man, we finally did it!
Yeah, versus, like, yeah, focusing on, like, processors, which, like, I get why you need an entire set to do, but is like kind of a weird mechanic versus going
into... It is
into,
so weird that the sixth color was like not that big of a deal. We just look back at it as like, oh, that was a fun mechanic.
I mean, from the fact that it completely broke Modern, it was a big deal. But like, yeah, I agree. It's kind of like, that should have been the focus. They made a mistake. They leaned a little bit too hard on creative to like dictate where that process went, heavily sacrificing gameplay. And Zendikar was not what we wanted. It was a weird set. But if we were to return, I think then they've stated this, it'll be much more what Zendikar was before.
D&D world.
D&D world is what it's supposed to be.
Okay.
With like a land mechanic.
Yeah, which is D&D world is originally the original Magic, where Magic came from. It was D&D, the card game.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So Zendikar is supposed to be truly the high fantasy adventure. Like, please, heroes, go to this cave. You know, yeah. Like, that's what yeah. original well, Zendikar
there's
was
definitely
supposed to
be. There's definitely an audience for it.
Yeah. And the original allies, which is what I liked about them, was more like, these are archetypal characters in D&D. You're playing, these are D&D characters is basically what they are. And you have wizards have this type of mechanic, and warriors have this type of mechanic,
and
rogues have this type of mechanic.
They get better based on how many members of your party you have.
Which is a bummer, because it feels like if they want to do that again and they want to do it correctly, they almost have to start over, because I almost feel like trying to do it correctly the third time through when you're going back is like, you're not going to be able to convince me to be excited about this and like, oh, wow, they've done this thing.
Well, if they go back to the slivers mechanic, I think people would be excited about it again. I think we'd have a weird middle ground where allies were weird, but making them more parasitic is, I think, the answer to this problem.
Interesting. Okay, so from this, we go to the next one, which is...
Scars of Mirrodin, which we talked about, New Phyrexia, Events
of
yeah, Portals.
We did that already. And then from there, we go to Return of Ravnica.
Return of the Ravnica.
Sorry. Innistrad.
Which we should talk about. I mean,
we haven't done yet. Yeah.
I think
we'll definitely go back there. Innistrad continues to remain a really popular set, and like can keep doing these iterations of like horror as a.
A genre of horror we haven't hit upon that they could base in? I mean, I think returning just to Innistrad as Innistrad was as a graveyard mechanic set that's all about zombies and vampires and flashback coming back maybe would be really cool, but is there a because we've done, you know, madness into cosmic horror. We've done classic, like 1800s horror. Is there another genre of horror that you would maybe think about doing?
I mean, if you wanted to go into like modern horror, like horror movies, like people with butcher's knives and masks and like...
Yeah, I mean, they have a little bit. Like butcher's cleaver is, you know, there's a bunch of butcher's cleavers in this shot. Everyone's got a butcher's cleaver. I don't know. Like more of like a Scream or Nightmare on Elm Street kind of
or
mystical horror.
You could do a sci-fi horror. That's what we have.
That's what Eldrazi was. That was kind of what they were. There's a lot of alien in
that's
and,
true,
and the
actually.
Thing
yeah,
in,
and all the tentacles, yeah. faces. Yeah, that's a good point.
I think they just part of me is just like go back to original Innistrad, see what happens, do some fun stuff.
Yeah, do some more iterations on just gothic horror and gothic horror tropes in general.
You could focus heavily on one of the tribes and make it in the way that Torment was black themed. You could make a vampire set, like a very much like centered around vampires or like centered around zombies or something like that, and iterations of that one type all throughout. I really want Merfolk to be back somewhere, like heavily.
Well, I think we're going at Lizanne was what we was spoiled as, but is now
Ixalor,
Atlantis, basically.
Which my running theory is because there's three different separate ones, which is that it's going to either be Mesoamerican, so like South American themed, Atlantis themed, or maybe pirate themed. And my theory is that it's going to be Gulf of Mexico themed and be all three, where you get like the Caribbean, you get under, you know, you get Atlantis. So a little, we're definitely getting Merfolk, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, unless,
we're definitely getting like a new Kiora and a new Vraska, right? I think we saw them.
Gotcha. So I mean, that's pretty much
Innistrad.
It's recent, also. So it's and we just were there.
Of all the sets to talk about, the return to Innistrad is the hardest for me to kind of speculate on because they ended on such a.
We wrapped it all up.
No, and it's just so recent. It was last year.
But since
and they didn't seed. Like, the next steps are, like, Soren gets released from the Carbonite he's stuck in, and Emrakul gets released from the moon she's stuck in. So it's just, like, undoing everything that happened in the last block is the only thing I can think of happening in the next one.
So from there, we go into Theros, which is one of the least popular recent sets.
It sold insanely well. I mean, like, from a mechanic perspective, I agree with you.
Why
but
did it sell
was,
insanely well? People hate Theros. That's, like, one of literally the most
I mean,
hated.
We hate Theros, well, but I think it's liked more than
I think it's one of these things where, in the modern era... Like each Magic set has just sold the best until the next set comes out, which then sells even more. You know, we're now entering this era of Magic where like each set is just exploding in sales.
It's been plateaued after Cons. It plateaued like right around Battle for Zendikar, partly because Battle for Zendikar was what it was as a popularity set, and then we're in this hyper aggressive every new two blocks a year, and so and then last year was so heavily inundated with multiple. Like draft formats that weren't even
too
in standard. So it did plateau. But Theros, Khans of Tarkir was the last record breaker. And then, and part of that had to do with Fetchlands and Hearts. Khans of Tarkir is the best draft format since Innistrad.
I feel so sad that I didn't play it when it was, I didn't draft at all.
Khans?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
I know the cards well because I opened enough of it and I like know the cards, but I just
that's
didn't
like
get
a little break you took.
Yeah, I mean, limited these days, I play the pre release, I draft here and there, but I tend to play Highlander Modern and then just like, research. We like discuss a lot. I'm like more into coverage. It's like more. Yeah. It's harder to find the nights of the week to go get the 4 or 5 hours to draft. It's easier to find 2 hours to play Modern with you.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, on the subject of Theros, just because I don't think Theros is one that we want to talk too heavily about, but you and I have talked a lot about Constellation as a mechanic.
Yeah,
how much we want Constellation back.
Well, we're definitely returning to Theros. They've said it. There's a
really?
Huge. Yeah, we're definitely returning.
Assuming Gideon survives Hour of Devastation. Then, like we've speculated on, like Gideon seeming obviously like he's the son of Heliod seems
like a
story string that they've hung out there for us to.
I don't know if they meant to do it, but they definitely decided after they couldn't get Hercules into Theros block that Gideon is Hercules, and he like then when they did the Gideon storyline in Origins, like very much set up. Heliod smiles upon him in a weird way. He has Heliod powers. He's indestructible. He kind of has all the attributes of Hercules.
Why does that not mean that in the Magic movie, The Rock is going to play Gideon then?
I'm all about The Rock.
Oh,
playing
I'd be
Gideon.
Totally down for The Rock.
I'm
sign
pretty
me
much,
up.
Like, you could, I'm down
pretty
for The Rock
the
to
rock
play
in
anything.
Anything.
But,
yeah.
But shouldn't The Rock be Garouk?
Well, yeah.
Can you smell what Garouk is cooking?
I think he's the only actor that could play Garruk. I think... The mountain is the only other person I could imagine playing him, though I don't know if I'd refer
Tom
to
Hardy. Tom Hardy.
Ron Perlman. Ron Perlman, like, can play any big...
He's not tan enough, but maybe, yeah.
I mean, he's not red enough to play Hellboy, but he plays a That's mighty fine
I could see,
Hellboy.
I could see Hardy or Jackman. We've had this conversation.
Yeah, yeah. We literally had this two episodes. Okay, but on Theros, the big cliffhanger was Elsbeth is dead but can be saved, and you're going to have a Johnny who I think will die at the end of Hour of Devastation if anyone's going to die, because he's Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Obi-Wan Kenobis always die, as did Gandalf, as did Dumbledore, as did...
Han Solo.
Well, no, Han Solo isn't an Obi-Wan Kenobi character.
Piece of trivia for you.
Oh, and the new one he is. Yeah, yeah, no, you're totally right. You're totally right.
Piece of trivia for you. Lord of the Rings, billions of Oscar nominations for the movies. Did Lord of the Rings films get any acting Oscar nominations through three films?
I don't believe so.
Yes, mostly because he said no, and one of us has to be right.
Do you know, which if you were going to guess yes, if you're going to guess
McKellen.
Yes. Yes, you're exactly right. Only four fellowships, the only acting nomination through three movies.
He got a supporting?
Yeah, I didn't realize this till the other day.
Interesting.
Should have won. Anyway, let's keep going.
Back to Theros. So that's one of them. I think we talked also about what mechanics are most popular. Devotion is a really popular one that I would be very surprised we don't see come back. Constellation is the one that everyone collectively thinks was kind of a big miss. Bestow is my favorite mechanic after those two in that set, but I also think is really unlikely to return, partly because... it, from a design perspective, doesn't seem very deep, and I think they've hit a lot of what it can do, and it's really complicated, and normally they're like, we have to get rid of some of these mechanics, and I think they're much more willing to take Monstrous back, as much as I think Monstrous is a boring mechanic, but they really like it, and I think it's really deep.
I also could see
they
them...
They being wizards.
I could see them sitting on Monstrous and just putting it off in another set also,
true,
and having the only returning mechanics when we go back to Theros be Devotion and Constellation.
And enchantment creatures.
And enchantment creatures, yeah, to help flesh out Devotion.
Yeah. I mean... Constellation, you mean?
Well, yes.
Yeah, Constellation is through and through the one that when I look up on when I'm doing card searches to try to build decks, I always come across Constellation cards, specifically Underworld Coinsmith, and I'm always just like, God, this would have been so sweet if there was just like more support to make
this
awesome.
Just the whole block, yeah.
Just,
you know, like, Constellation was also supposed to be the Azurius mechanic in Return to Ravnica.
Oh, interesting. It needs to be in a whole block centered around.
Yeah, I think doing a Constellation themed back to Theros. I think I only think we get the five main gods. I think we get new versions of all those cards because I think they'll be relevant, and I think it's going to be about Gideon redeeming himself by saving Elsbeth and maybe defeating Heliod in some way and, you know, doing that whole storyline, which would be cool. I do like the gods. I like those gods better than I like the newest gods. And
any planeswalkers we'd get back?
Yeah, Gideon. I think Gideon would be another thing. We might get a black-white Elsbeth. I think we'll get, because
cool.
That's what seems to be all the black characters that come from the undead are black plus whatever color they were. I think we would get...
I mean, I think it would be cool. Like, I'm really excited
those
for,
are the old,
to, I'm
Johnny
really excited
if he's
to
alive.
See more... of these, especially now that they've said that they're going to stop forcing the Gatewatch characters to appear in every, like, they're going to appear story in every set, but not necessarily take up all the Planeswalker slots. Because I'm really excited to see, like, what is Domri Raid up to?
Yeah.
Like, having this, like, this boy warrior who's trying to prove himself show up on Theros would be really cool. And he's in like, red-green, and there's, like, now this kind of chaos around Zinnagos.
What about Ashiok?
Ooh.
Well, Ashiok looks like she's coming back this... fall.
In Ixu.
Yeah, I also think she's a perfect fit for Theros too, because they have all the Gorgon tribal on Theros. And
Ashiok's actually, it turns out, really good. The more I've played with the card and the further we've gotten away from it, in Modern even, Ashiok's really good. That card's very powerful.
I've never seen it in Modern. I'd like to see what it did.
I saw somebody playing it.
But yeah, so I think there's a lot to return to Theros. I think there's just a lot more from a like top-down design of Greek world, a lot to return to, so I think we'll definitely go back there. Next is Khons of Tarkir, and this is probably...
I think this is the last one, because if before we get fully into Khons, I think this is the last one to talk about, because following Khons, we go back to... Isn't that...
Yeah, Kaladesh is the only other one we would maybe talk about.
We're on Kaladesh right now.
And I have like one sentence to say about Kaladesh, but let's do that now so we can not have to deal with it. So Kaladesh, I just think, like... did a really good job at hinting at planar portals as well. I think that's like the next big step in Magic's storyline. And like, because Tezzeret was trying to figure out planar portals there to get to, so Nicol Bolas can do things. And we've talked about Venser, and we talked about other kind of people trying to do portals. So I think that's a definite direction they're trying to get back to for
and
some
planar
reason.
Portals allow you to go back to any of the ones we're talking about. That allows you to go to Dominaria and do that if you wanted to.
You get more crossover, big event. Like, I think eventually they're going to get to their next big event, and I think it has to be Phyrexia.
Like, if Phyrexia invades a bunch of your favorite planes, and so instead of a given plane getting the... this is this entire set takes place here. There could be a set that's like not called Invasion, obviously, because Invasion's already been taken, but there could be a set where the theme is Phyrexia is invading a bunch of your favorite planes.
And that's where you effectively do get Time Spiral too. You kind of get that. That's sort of how you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it could be interesting if it's like Phyrexia is invading five planes, and the five mechanics are one returning from each of the five planes they're invading. So like it's flashback from Innistrad because they're invading Innistrad, and it's
That'd be really sweet.
Vehicles because they're invading Kaladesh.
That's cool. That's a cool idea.
I mean, like I'm surprised you don't like Magic Origins more than you do, because that was kind of the closest thing we've had to Time Spiral 2.
Magic Origins.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Magic Origins was like a tiny Time Spiral. I love that.
Yeah,
set.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. It's just it's a core set. It's a great core set.
Yeah, yeah.
But it has
probably
a lot of core
set
things.
Greatest core set.
Yeah.
I absolutely love Rin's Prodigy, and there's like a lot of Origins cards, Garoppa Aether Grid. There's cards that came out of that set that are just super cool for a core set.
Yeah, the Thopter mechanic, the elves. Yeah, I really like.
Problem
that
is,
set.
look at Future Sight's 181 cards or whatever, and look at every one of those cards, and there's like 90 of them that are interesting, and it's like it's pretty hard to find a set like that.
And
so
that I think is the thing we'll never return to because of new World Order.
They're not going to show us 44 card files in one set.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's the thing is. Magic Origins is what Time Spiral looks like under New World Order. And I think that's cool. Like, Spell Mastery was a cool mechanic.
Yeah,
having
really cool.
Flip Walkers is really cool. I hope that's a thing they come back to.
Flip Walkers?
I hope we get to see more of the... Like, I'd love to see what did a Johnny as a Flip Walker look like? What does Sarkhan as a Flip Walker look like?
I think we'll almost for sure get Flip Walkers again. That seems like a given. So, take me through cons... And the grand plan you guys have with this.
Okay.
Okay.
This
okay.
is what started this whole conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you go.
Sure. Okay, so everybody remember Khonzatark here, Block tells the time-traveling story where in the original timeline, there are five warring clans. They are all based around wedges, and they had lots of really cool design that went into them. And they were like extremely popular because for very much the same reason that the
shards
Ravnica guilds or the shards are. Like, people were able to identify with, like, oh, the Mongolian horde that is the Mardu or the... whatever.
And I would say the clans are more popular even than maybe the shards are.
Yeah. Yeah, because they had more they had more of a group theme
identity
to them than them. And so then in Fate Reforged, we went back
in time.
He saves Ugin's life. Ugin's back, and then we jump back to the future.
Well, he doesn't save Ugin's. He does save Ugin's life, but he kind of locks him in carbonite as well.
Who does?
Sarkhan.
Sarkhan.
So
Sarkhan goes back in time.
So Ugin is alive, but no longer micromanaging Khan or the plane of Tarkir. And so what happens over the next timeline is that dragons go hog wild and start taking over everything and become these kind of dominant tyrants. And
so you get the Elder Dragon cycle of Sulemgar and Kolaghan and those guys who have
Kolaghan's command fame.
Yeah.
Would we get an actual legitimately powerful, like really good Sarkhan at that point? There's been four, and we've never had an actually really good one.
So here's our thought that we had. So the thing is, when we came to Dragons of Tarkir, a lot of people in the Magic community were like excited to see a whole set called Dragons of Tarkir that was filled with dragons, but that the result came about with the destruction of all these clans that people had become really invested in over the course of drafting Khan's Block.
And it introduced Megamorph, which was a pretty behated mechanic. And on top of that, it got rid of... Like, it was the largest dragon set right after the second largest dragon set of all time. Because Fate Reforged had a lot of dragons in it, which was kind of maybe more of a mistake. And so there's a lot of these, like, weird... issues with that world, and on top of that, did they do a really good job of setting up that the clans are going to revolt? Like, these are there's the cycle of hate cards, which you might remember. Of there's like a one drop red one that does four damage to target red or blue creature, and so there's these like five really good hate cards that all have this theme of the original cons and the original clans are under the ground and under the surface ready to rebel.
Right, and we have the five champions, kind of the marquee champion legendary creatures from cons, come back in altered form. So you have like Zergo Bellstriker and Narset the Enlightened to show that like this is a different timeline, they have changed.
Yeah. Now, and on Sarkhan, on your point, what our theory is because Ugin's like the one is the first kind of head of this plane.
Okay.
And Sarkhan is kind of the second plane, or now the third planeswalker to come from this plane. But he, falls in love with Narset. And Sarkhan has been every color but white so far. That's the only color he's never actually had on a card. He's had black, green, blue, but not, and black. Did I say black twice? And red. our theory kind of last night is he's going to be the reverse Ugin, which being the first five-color Planeswalker. And some of that might come from his love with Narset, because they definitely have a thing going on with each other. So she influences him to be a little bit more
or
white.
His appreciation for like bringing order
balance
to
and order
his...
to the plane.
Gotcha.
And so the idea for this set would be the Khans and the Khans revolt, and then Sarkhan becomes the Sarkhan.
Yeah.
Because like the idea is that Sarkhan, you choose your name. This is a lot of story, and Ben's eyes are like glassing over. But basically, in Mardu, who is the black, white, red clan, you choose your name when you become a person. And Sarkhan chose the Sarkhan, which is kind of him saying F you to the main, the actual Khan of that clan, saying I am the one Khan.
Which is the reason why he was kicked out in the first place.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
He was like way too full of himself, which, you know, you can kind of get from Sarkhan.
Because Sarkhan literally means like the Khan of Khans, like above all Khans or whatever.
So him becoming actually the Khan of Khans and becoming this Nor unifying force of bringing the clans back while also keeping the dragons around seems like a really interesting storyline in general. And him being our first five-color Planeswalker gives us that cool reverse dichotomy from Ugin, who is a purely colorless Planeswalker.
Would he be all five colors, or would he be some sort of hybrid five-color thing?
I think he's just straight up
five-color. I think he'd be called the Sarkhan and then just Wooburg as his casting cost. And he'd be our first...
Wooburg?
Wooburg?
White, blue, black, red, green. You don't know Wooburg?
No.
Man. Okay, so Magic players out there, Wooburg is WotC's internal term
all
for when
colors.
They make a five-color thing. Like, you pronounce...
Because it's just Wooburg. It's pronouncing the colors.
W-U-B-R-G, yeah. Wooburg.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. So, never heard of that.
So it would be a cool set because thematically, either in the big return to Tarkir or the smaller follow-up set, you could have both a new Ugin, colorless, and the Sarkhan, all five colors, and they'd be a cool pair.
How would you properly color power balance a Wooburg Planeswalker?
Four abilities.
What would he do? He have four abilities. Would one of them be like, it would be like, what, he fights five for five loyalty. His minus four when he comes down is like make 4/3/3 dragons and they fight everything.
Well, here's I've actually thought about that. I thought because I've been thinking about like if there were ever to make an Urza Planeswalker as like a throwback. I've always thought that the minus one could be add Wooburg to your mana pool. Like add the five colors.
Oh, it's just
colors.
A straight up.
Like he just makes five colors.
Color thing. He also becomes a dragon. Like, that's, like, his thing.
Like, his, like, plus, maybe his plus turns him into his dragon.
Sarkhan?
Yeah.
That's the thing that he already has, though, the red one.
But that's,
yeah,
like,
but
his
like,
thing.
They like having one, like, Gideon in every single card.
Yeah, right.
Makes a dragon. And so, like, you do one, he becomes a dragon.
Or
he makes a dragon. One of them is, you know, maybe a more of a white-blue ability, like a tap-down thing, maybe something that's, like, Narset adjacent.
For Wooburg, though, he would need to have a minus that was savage. Like I'm telling you, it would be, like, make 9 power and dragons for minus 4 on 5 loyalty, and, like, they fight everything.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to design a Planeswalker on... I mean, I'm down to do an entire episode about talking about designing a 5-color Planeswalker. I don't think we have the time or the research to
we should,
do
you know
that
what we
right
should do,
here.
Actually, is we should, on an episode coming up soon, we should design all of the Planeswalker space. We should choose, like, the 5 most relevant ones that haven't been done, like a Wooburg Planeswalker, the one mana Planeswalker, which you've talked about on here before. We should do the episode that
exists.
Designing those 5 or something like that. I think that'd be a fun episode.
Yeah. But here's a question on this, more of a question for you guys. Is he a dragon?
Oh, is Sarkhan ascend and become a dragon?
Because he can turn into a dragon. I mean, that's why he's be able to be the unifying force, is because he can become a dragon to deal with the dragons dealing with him, but then he can also be human maybe to unify, and that's why he's like kind of this perfect amalgamation of things. But is he like, when he ascends, is he now the Sarkhan, also a dragon to compete on the Ugin, Nicol Bolas dragon level?
I'm down. I mean, that sounds cool, especially because he could keep his long mustache and
sweet.
Stuff.
And be a dragon.
Like, he could still have his smoldering eyes that he has, like, in every picture, and his long mustaches and goatee, like, on the dragon. Like, so he'd look kind of like a Mushu or Lung sort of dragon. Like, that'd be cool.
Yep.
I'd be down
sick.
For it. And we could get a new Narset.
Yeah, new Narset, new Ugin, new, and then we'll probably get...
And maybe we could get some
a Gatewatch member, introduce whichever one you think would be relevant. Probably Chandra or Nissa, because they're just work in that way. Maybe Jace. Jace is always trying to find Ugin.
I especially like the idea that the former Khans, like, you know, Vizier, Sidisi's now like an undead Vizier. But like the idea that she leads, even as a zombie Naga, leads an insurrection of the Naga against Sulimgar, and yeah. Anna Finza as a spirit leads the human and Einok against Dromoka,
right.
And that sort of thing.
And the other idea we had on this was that the way you kind of end the unification is maybe having the five original Elder Dragons come out with five enemy color ones.
That's so cool.
They're allied originally, and then maybe the way you show like, oh, it's unified. Now they're part of the clans. Because the clans were enemy focused. Like if you draft Khan's block,
right.
You would draft the enemy color. You would start pack one in one enemy color and then see which other enemy color pair that pairs with that. So you'd be like, I'm going to be green-black, which is like a big butts archetype. And then you'd be like, oh, I can either go into green-black-blue, which is much more of a mill myself, graveyard, dread, delve strategy, or this same strategy can also lean a little bit more into
green-black-white.
Green-black-white, which is about having outlast creatures outlast.
Yeah, yeah.
Outlast.
Yeah.
And so like it's more like slivers and then just kind of, and that's why it kind of shuffled in each direction. And so having the dragons become more representative of the enemy colored pairs, and you could get the enemy colored commands, which also sounds really sweet.
And you could get,
no, I'm into that.
And you could get a new enemy color part of this Elder Dragon cycle. And so either the old dragons like Sulimgar and Kolaghan could die, and we have new enemy color dragons
that Sarkhan are part of makes.
That either Sarkhan make, or maybe Sarkhan and Ugin together like
make new Elder Dragons.
And you just throw in the enemy colored cycle lands just to do it.
Ooh. Well, I think I want to get enemy cycle lands.
In Hour of Devastation, please.
Oh, you yeah. think maybe?
I really hope so.
I hope so.
Yeah.
But I think well, the problem with that is you'd have to bring cycling back. When I think what, and we'll get to what I think the big mechanic return would be.
Oh yeah.
But I think just changing them into new colors, like transforming. So Sulimgar becomes just straight black green instead of blue green, blue black, where he's much more like a slave. I like the idea of he's become enslaved by the Naga, and you go into Atarka, who is this red-green fierceness, going more elemental and becoming blue-green, and you get, my favorite, I think, is Kolaghan, because he just goes from red-black to red-white, which is just the exact same.
So he becomes more like a soldier dragon as opposed to like a wild marauder
like,
dragon.
Fast!
Yeah.
That's all I care about.
Speed.
And just like you get this cool transition where they become more representative of the other half and probably the good half of what each of the clans are. Because if you look at what they are now, they're kind of the worst attributes of what those clans were, being hyper aggressive, just devastation with Kolaghan and selfishness with Sulimgar. And even Ojutai is like oppressive control versus much more of an emotion based martial arts kind of deal. So you can kind of get a cool transition.
And we can finally get a Talgum card.
Yeah, finally. That'll happen for sure.
Yeah.
From Talgum Scheming. Do you know what that card is?
Tygam Scheming.
Or Tygum.
Tygum. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I'm surprised we haven't gotten him
anywhere. I really thought that Ishai, the partner commander, it should have been Tygum. And he can fly because he's a monk. There are plenty of flying monks in the thing. I don't know why Ishai
Giant
is not
mistake.
Tygum. That seems like a huge mistake.
Good old Tygam.
But yeah, so I think
the big thing is the
mechanical return. Because the biggest mistake of Khan's block was Megamorph. And specifically, if Megamorph was the Fate Reforged morph mechanic, and you went from like present day it's morph, back in the day it was Megamorph because dragons were around, and it's kind of like a dinosaur, like they get bigger and everything was stronger back in the day. Same like dinosaurs, even though that doesn't fully play, but fine, like we would kind of accept that. And then you get Back to the Future, and it's Manifest. Manifest should have been the third set mechanic because Manifest is so much more interesting.
Manifest was sweeter,
like,
for sure.
And Manifest feels like a really cool mechanic that they could have make. They could make two sets worth of cards out of. So when we return to Tarkir, Manifest is one of the major set mechanics.
Literally any card that makes a 2/2 zombie could make a manifest. Could manifest instead,
right?
And that is an infinite length.
And I'm really hoping this new. I'm really hoping this new Ugin that we have. His plus ability is to manifest the top card of your deck.
Yeah, and I like from a thematic perspective, it's the rebels kind of taking like ancient magic to fight the dragons as they are now, and using that manifest ability as kind of their way of being sneaky, but also in a different way than just straight up morph, which will be really cool. I think that's the majority of the things we kind of went over.
Mm-hmm.
On this place. So yeah, that's what I want. That's what I want this set to be.
So what do we think after Hour of Devastation and Atlantis? Where do we go?
So there's a couple worlds. There are a couple worlds that I know are high on the we want to do this, and they include Pirate World, which Ixalor may or may not be Pirate World. There's a cool idea floating around about Prison World, which would be really cool. And it could be especially cool if, like, one of the demons that owns Liliana's soul is being locked up in this prison world.
Cool.
And then also Viking world, like the Immersturm and war, that Warstorm Surge and stuff.
It's the last Pantheon, and they, like, now that they've gotten to decide that we're going to do Pantheons, they're, like, raring to do all of them, and it's the last one we haven't really gotten, like, the Thor, Odin.
There's a part of me that feels like that's too soon after we've just had, like,
well, I don't think it'll
Mongolian
be
warlords, Greek mythology. If we were to go into that next, or even in the next couple years, I think that in general people aren't well-versed, I don't want to say intelligent because that's incorrect, well-versed or aware enough to draw the difference there in their mind that it wouldn't just feel like retreading too so quickly.
I mean, it would be a lot of Thor. People like Viking helmets. Like, there's enough a little bit there, but I don't disagree with
Theros
you that
feels
it's
a lot,
it's
like
a lot of retread.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know if they necessarily have to, like, do you feel like they would have to do gods if they went to...
I think they've said that they would do, that would be the third Pantheon would maybe think about doing.
Prison World sounds sick.
I'm
super cool about Prison World. Detain as just a generic, but like Detain as one of the, like, the, like, returning mechanics for Prison World.
I think like a
really
black-white mechanic in that as Detain.
Sure.
Like I think Detain is not a blue-white exclusive kind of ability. I think other colors can mess with that.
And the cool thing about
even
a Prison World is Prison World could also, again, tap a little bit into our time spiral, because if our Prison World is not a world that is itself has just become a prison, but is a prison used by planeswalkers to lock up dangerous types,
yeah,
then that could be almost like time spiral in that, like, a few loose ends throughout magic history that we've never really gotten around to could appear on Prison World. Like, I believe Tevish Zaat, who is sort of a minor villain throughout the Invasion storyline and tried to undo Urza's legacy weapon project. Like, I think Tevish Zaat's still alive. He showed up in Time Spiral, and he's just, like, bebopping around.
Could we do, on Prison World, like, sort of, like, Inception meets Tron, sort of, like, sci-fi, all, like... sci-fi,
oh,
like,
totally
mind within a mind,
Thunderdome-y things,
crazy
too.
Like vertical walls you're running up that are like brightly colored, super lasers and stuff. I feel like you could totally take it in that direction, and if you put like Jace around that, it would be so sick.
Well, there are like really cool archetypes in this whole war. You get like the Mad Max stuff, you get the you get Tron, you get
guys, I have an idea.
Yeah,
story-wise, the reason we're on Prison World is it comes after Return to Ravnica. Because we're going back into President Niv-Mizzet, or wanting to be like, hey, this Planeswalker should not be the Guild Pact because, like, he's not from here. And he somehow calls upon the powers of other Planeswalkers, hitherto unseen, who are like, yeah, you can't do this. You can't claim ownership of a plane. Jace, you are found guilty of, like, manipulating the events of another plane, and throw him into Prison World. And then the Gatewatch has to come and rescue Jace from Prison World.
Sounds sick.
Yeah, I'm down. The other half would be the other one, Arkham Asylum.
Okay, that'd,
like,
be cool.
It kind of do the Gatewatch go to this prison world for whatever reason, and then they get stuck in it because some prisoners take over, or like they like bring Tezzeret there, and then Tezzeret ends up being like, "Oh, this is my thing now, and you guys all have to escape."
Tezzeret in the same. Oh my god, Tezzeret in this like prison Tron world sounds so sick. For whatever reason, I know that it would never happen. Makes me feel like Tezzeret needs green in him just so he can have more lasers.
Why is green a laser color?
I don't know.
Because lasers that are green, have you seen them? They're cool.
Tron? I don't know.
That's the Empire.
I guess it's blue anyway.
For Rebel.
All right. I think that pretty much wraps us up, guys. We're on a tangent.
This episode
is
very long.
This is like 2 hours or something?
No, it's like an hour and a half. It's one of our longer ones. All right. Thank
you guys.
I hope
you enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, yeah. I hope it was great. Make sure to follow us at the MMCast. I'm at Kes Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
Make sure to check out Marshall's podcast, Do You Still Love It?
And
Do I Still Love It?
You always do that.
I know. That's an Alex
I have one. I've wondered if, like, if do you still love it or do we still love it? But I like Do I Still Love It. It invites the listener to put themselves in our place.
It's a question more than a question.
It's like, it would be like if I started introducing you every time to, like, a party. It's my friend Alexi. Anyway, let's go get some, like, you know what I mean?
So, yeah.
That
please.
Happens. yeah, so.
Check it out. We just released the Three Ninjas episode.
Sick.
So.
Yeah, and then.
You know what? I don't plug it on here that often anymore, but Action Movie Anatomy, my movie show also.
Yeah.
We are recording our 99th episode this week.
Congratulations.
Yeah, we go to 100 episodes a week from Wednesday. We'll be doing Heat, which is a classic, one of the all-time action movies. And for the 99th episode, The Raid Redemption, which I've never seen.
Oh, nice. Wow.
People love the Raid. So, yeah. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening. That's AMA Podcast on Twitter if you want to find.
Yeah, we'll talk.
Yeah, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Talk to you next week, which is really 2 weeks from now.
Oh, no. The 100th episode is this week. I was wrong. It's this week.
Yeah. All right. Bye, guys.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.